Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Hope you've all had a wonderful week. Certainly it was a week of holidays, Christmas, and hopefully families getting together with families, people and friends getting together to celebrate the season, celebrate the holidays. Certainly much of it tempered by recent events, whether it was that horrific storm Sandy, who blew through, that blew through the Northeast. Certainly, we experienced it here in New York. The horrific shooting in Connecticut. So many horrible things happened, but we have to look forward and hopefully to a better new year, just days away. Also, we have to mention the passing of one of America's great generals, General Norman Schwarzkopf, who, of course, led the charge literally and figuratively in the first Iraq War, Desert Storm. Amazing general, and from members of the armed forces who I'm friends with, who encountered him, who met him, they were all in awe of him, a man who came to be known as the Bear, and who was a huge advocate for the men and women who served under him. That is, of course, what leadership is about, to stand up for the people who are placed under your command, who go in harm's way to make America safer, and to not abandon them, and to pay them the respect and the support that they're certainly entitled to, talking about the men and women of the armed services, of course. For those of you new to my program, you may not know this, but I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. I've served 30 years with the former INS. Now, of course, that mission or shambles of that mission have been picked up and placed under the umbrella of DHS, an agency the government refers to as the Department of Homeland Security, out of frustration and often disgust, to be blunt about it. I've come to call it the Department of Homeland Surrender. You know, this immigration issue is critical to America because it does encompass so many of the threats and challenges that America and Americans face today. And by the way, this is not about scapegoating immigrants or being xenophobic and not wanting people to come here. Quite the contrary. The immigration laws that our government refuses to enforce is also the mechanism by which we admit over 1.1 million lawful immigrants into the United States, in the United States every year, and also admit well over 100 million foreign visitors into the United States. So the immigration laws are not one-sided, but at their foundation, they were enacted to do just two things: protect innocent lives and save the jobs of American workers. Incredibly, there are politicians who have succeeded in winning elected office and winning repeatedly, even though they openly are contemptuous of those laws. And I just have to tell you, I am flabbergasted at the foolishness of the average voter who can vote for some of these characters. This isn't a liberal issue or a conservative issue. It's not a Democrat or a Republican issue. This issue of national security, while we speak about General Schwarzkopf, is really an American issue. I don't know anybody of any political party that believes that their ideology should amount to a suicide pact. We are currently waging a war against terrorists and transnational gangs. We are finding huge numbers of Americans who are unemployed or underemployed. So how, with all of this for a backdrop, people don't want to understand or don't come to understand the true significance of the immigration laws is something that leaves me flabbergasted. As I said, I served for the INS for... served the INS for about 30 years. If you want to read more about me, there's a couple of websites I would love for you to visit. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. You can learn quite a bit about me there. Many of my prior commentaries are posted on that website. Also, I am involved with another endeavor, or two other endeavors, if you will. I am a senior fellow for an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, C-A-P-S. Their terrific website is capsweb.org. That's all one word, C-A-P-S-W-E-B, capsweb.org. They are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. I've made some great friends out there, always good to visit. And I'm very pleased to be affiliated with that terrific organization. So please visit their website. I write for them, as do other people. And if you look at the impact of illegal immigration on California, please understand that this, by the way, is not about border states, because we have 50 border states in America, but the disastrous situation that California finds itself in from a perspective of economics and so forth, much of it the direct result of failures to enforce those common sense and reasonable immigration laws. Although, of course, the open borders crowd would probably disagree, but we'll get to that shortly. But again, Californians for Population Stabilization, visit their website. You can reach me through them or through michaelcutler.net. And finally, I'm involved with another website, and this one is called talkborder.com. One word, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R, talkborder.com. And this is part of Ann Magazine. And one of the things that I do at talkborder.com is to post videos of interviews that I've done with a wide variety of people, whether it's Congressman Lou Barletta, who's one of the few real heroes on Capitol Hill, a man I am proud to consider a friend, someone who had been the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and then went on to represent that same community in Congress. I was his final witness when the ACLU sued him for daring to enact immigration ordinances to protect his community from a massive influx of foreign gangs, primarily MS-13. And suddenly this very quiet, bucolic town, and I've been there, it's an amazing place. It's almost a picture book place in the mountains of Pennsylvania. Suddenly they had this massive influx of drug traffickers, and to combat this, and the violence, and the shootings and killings, he realized that the bottom line was that these folks that were doing this were illegally present in the United States and tried to fight back, only to be sued by the ACLU. Absolutely astonishing. This is not about being anti-immigrant. You know, in point of fact, the most likely victims of the violence perpetrated by transnational gangs, criminals who come here from other countries, the most likely victims are the members of the same ethnicity, likely with origins from the very same countries that these characters come from. And it's not just about Latin America, folks. It's about China. It's about Russia. It's about the Caribbean, about Europe. You know, this has nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. If the immigration laws had that kind of a thing going for them, that we were treating people differently in terms of race or ethnicity, there's no way, quite frankly, that I could have enforced those laws. And what you may not know about me, and it's something that I think is worth talking a little bit about, back in college, I was the president of a B'nai B'rith group. In my last year of high school and my first year or so of college, I was actively involved with the B'nai B'rith. Those of you familiar with it know it's a Jewish organization. I am of the Jewish faith. My grandmother, in fact, died in the Holocaust, and I was named for her. And one of the things I did with the B'nai B'rith was to go to the White House. This was in the mid-60s when President Johnson was the president of the United States, and participate in demonstrations asking that President Johnson convince the then Soviet Union to permit Jews and other members of religious minority groups to leave the Soviet Union and go to the United States, go to Israel, go wherever they wanted to go so they could worship freely and not face discrimination as they were within the Soviet Union. And I have to tell you that when I began my career as an immigration inspector, which is how I started working for the INS, hate to admit it, but it was way back in October 1971, it gave me great pride and great sense of accomplishment to sit in a booth at Kennedy International Airport in New York City and admit into the United States refugees from the Soviet Union because, you know, I had this sense that perhaps some of the efforts that we expended and that we knew that the White House was sympathetic to, you know, back then they sent out telegrams, and President Johnson had sent a telegram literally across the street to us saying that he was watching the demonstration from the windows of the Oval Office, or from the windows of the White House, at least. I don't know if it was in the Oval Office, and was in agreement with us and thanked us for our commitment to freedom. Ralph Abernathy, Dr. Ralph Abernathy, working in conjunction with Dr. Martin Luther King, speaking on his behalf, addressed us and read a message to us that Dr. Martin Luther King had written, again, in support of what we were attempting to accomplish. Immigration is not simply about locking America down and saying nobody gets in. Anybody who thinks that that is a reasonable approach needs to be put in a rubber room somewhere. That is not at all what we're talking about. You know, sometimes the enormity of the immigration issue, we're dealing with millions of people, it becomes so unwieldy that so many people have a problem wrapping their brain around it. And going back to my second grade experience when I first became enamored with astronomy, a hobby that I still have to this very day, my original dream was to design spacecraft, I started to use analogies. And if you're familiar with my writing and if you're familiar with my congressional testimony, and in fact I think we're up to 15 congressional hearings where I've testified before Congress and state legislative bodies, in order to make my point, I like to use analogies. So what I want all of you out there to think about is that responsible immigration law enforcement, responsible and real, you know, solid border security, is the equivalent of a responsible homeowner who makes certain to put strong locks on his or her doors, to lock their windows at night or when they go off on a trip somewhere, to set the burglar alarm, and to look through the peephole before admitting a stranger into their home to make certain that the person who wants to come in does not pose a threat to their well-being. That's what we're talking about. What is mind-boggling to me is that after what we have seen in terms of terrorism, in terms of the incursion of Mexican drug cartel members into the United States and violent gangs such as that which Congressman Lou Barletta confronted in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, it's remarkable to me that we even have to have this conversation. It's one of those things where you would think that you should simply file it under common sense. You know, you don't wear a bathing suit unless maybe you're part of the polar bear club when it's 5 degrees outside and there's a foot of snow on the ground. Anybody with a half a brain says, well, I'm going to put on a heavy overcoat, maybe mittens and a hat and a scarf and boots. You know, you don't have to have a conversation with a normal person and say, you know, it's snowing outside, I don't think those tennis shorts are going to cut it. But that's exactly where we are because so many people are profiting off of immigration, both legal and illegal. It is eroding America's middle class. There was a news program, and I've been on the show a number of times, and I'm not going to mention which one. I'm not trying to engage in a war with anybody. God knows we fight enough battles trying to get an honest perspective out there about immigration. But there was a news program that aired a couple of weeks ago, or within the last week perhaps, and they had one of their so-called journalists come on, and for the entire program, they kept saying, coming up, we have jobs. Stay tuned. We're going to tell you where you can find work. And this went on for the duration of a program that runs a couple of hours. And I sat there thinking, I wonder where they're able to come up with jobs for people, because that's all that people seem focused on is the economy, jobs, and so forth. And rightfully so. This is about survival. My dad was a construction worker. I remember what it was like when he got laid off from work and suddenly we were eating tuna fish sandwiches and pasta with cheese, 6 days out of seven so my parents could make ends meet. So jobs are important. And finally, this person came on, this young lady, and the jobs they were talking about, for the most part, were paying $8, $9, or $10 per hour. And I was absolutely incensed. Imagine some person who's desperate to go to work, lost his or her job, not through any fault of their own, but because of the economic situation. Or perhaps maybe their job was outsourced. Or perhaps they brought in foreign workers on specialized visas, the so-called high-tech visas. So imagine that person sitting home on that morning, listening to this program, and now what are we being told? That most of the jobs that they were talking about were seasonal jobs that did not pay more than $10 an hour, although in fairness, a couple jobs supposedly had a commission attached to it, so maybe it could make a couple of more bucks. But how in the world can anybody support themselves, let alone a family, with a $10 an hour job, let alone an $8 an hour job. And this is what we're witnessing in America today. They talk about how many jobs are created, but they will very rarely tell you what the salary range is. And in fact, CBS Radio reported just about a month ago that today the middle class is contracting. What had been 61% of our people, now the middle class applies to 51%, and they said that it began at 37,000 or 36,000 a year. I'd love to know where in the United States you can earn $37,000 a year, even if you're living by yourself in a house that's been paid off. How in the world could you live anywhere in America on that kind of money and be considered middle class? Probably the middle class is down to 30% of the population of the United States. And in fact, another news report, very worrying, is that for the first time in years, the average hourly wage has declined in the United States. Wages are going down, costs are going up, and all's right with the world. This is stupefying to me. It's stupefying to me because, whether you know this or not, every month the United States admits well over 150,000 foreign workers into the United States. We admit nearly 100,000 lawful immigrants every month. Now, yes, some of them are children. They're not immediately working. But over time, they will reach the age where they will work. And this has been going on for years. So we have kids that are hitting the age where they can work from those who were admitted years ago. So, again, the population of workers increasing because of immigration. We also admit over 10,000 H-1B visas or aliens with H-1B high-tech visas every month. We have visitors coming in on the J-1 exchange visitor program working in the United States. And according to the GAO, 2011, we admitted 447,000 foreign students into the United States legally, and many of them will be given authorizations for practical training, a.k.a. work. Now, if everybody was working in America, I'd say, well, that's fine. We need workers. Let's import them. But we're not short on workers, folks. We are short on jobs. When an airline is booked, you don't try to sell more seats because there are no seats. We're bringing in ever more foreign workers at a time when the job creation, meaningful job creation, is still a problem, where people are still losing their homes to foreclosure. Lots of the spam I get on my computer, and I'm sure you're seeing this stuff also, is about part-time jobs or instant cash loans or easy credit cards because people are out there pulling hair out of their head trying to figure out how to make ends meet, trying to figure out where they're going to be able to pay for their next meal or feed their children or God only knows, try to send their kids off to college. And you even have schools in the United States today that are providing tuition to students whose qualification is that they're illegal aliens present in the United States. I don't get any of this business. Now, again, I am the son of an immigrant. Many of the folks that I grew up around were immigrants. I have no problem with that. But we need to know who we're letting in. We need to know that if we give someone political asylum, and you can imagine with my family background, that's an important issue for me. But we have to make certain that the system has integrity. The system lacks integrity, and therein lies the problem. The other part of the problem is that the open borders folks, and I've come to call them the immigration anarchists, have been very, very successful, very adept, if you will, at the use of language to confuse and obfuscate the issue. They get very angry when you use the word alien. Oh, my God, you said alien. It's to be equated with the N-word. This is a terrible word. The word alien is no insult. The word alien simply means any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. That's not my definition, by the way. It's the definition to be found in the Immigration and Nationality Laws of the United States of America. Any person, not a citizen or national, is an alien. If you can find an insult in that, I want you to let me know where the insult is. And by the way, if you want to call in, you can call in. My phone number here is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. And, you know, I've been writing incessantly about the madness of this use of jargon, this misleading use of jargon. They focus on the fact that people who are here illegally were undocumented. Everything is great. The only problem, minor problem, they don't have papers. Well, we're not talking about a puppy without papers, folks. We're talking about people who have no official identity documents to attest to who they are. That's what we're talking about. And this nonsense started with President Jimmy Carter, and they talked about undocumented workers. You know, when I was a kid, I got my first job as a babysitter, babysitting for tenants and neighbors when I was 12 years old. But if you really wanted to work outside the home, you needed working papers. So in New York City, if you're 16 or if you're 14 or older, but you're still in school, you have to get working papers. A kid working without working papers is truly an undocumented worker. To refer to an illegal alien as an undocumented worker is nutty. You know, now they're calling them unauthorized because I've raised the point that if you can't prove who you are, this poses a threat to national security. So they are now considered unauthorized. And the administration very often uses that language, unauthorized. That's like saying a bank robber is somebody who made an unauthorized withdrawal. This is a violation of law that's designed to protect our security and to protect the jobs of American workers. And they keep saying that they're undocumented. Well, why don't we go back to a little bit of jargon that we used when I worked for the old INS? An alien who ran the border, who evaded the inspections process, was known by a three-letter abbreviation. We call them EWIs, EWI for short. So if your boss said to you, Mike, can you go process that EWI? This wasn't a pejorative. It meant an alien who had entered without inspection, EWI. That's what's critical. This is a way of confusing the issue. It's not that they didn't have papers, it's that they snuck in. And when someone sneaks in somewhere, you know that it's probably not in your best interest. Instinctively, if God forbid you came home tonight and found somebody sitting in your living room, drinking some of your soda pop and watching your television, the first words that would probably come out of your mouth would be to look at this individual and say, "What are you doing here?" Because that's the instinct. Why is this person here? What are you doing here? Where illegal aliens are concerned, the issue is we don't know. Now, some of them are simply working and they're desperate. And I want you to know that as an immigration agent, I did not take great joy in arresting people who, as far as we could determine, were desperate for a job and were working here. You felt bad that they resorted to that tactic because you wished they could have a decent future in their own country. You know, I've often said that the average American family looks at their child sleeping in a crib and they say to each other, the mother and father will say, gee, I hope our kid gets to go to college for the brightest future possible. Not necessarily true anymore, by the way. But in Mexico, that same couple likely looking at their baby sleeping in the crib would say, we hope our kid can get to America for a bright future. That's nutty. That's not good for Mexico. It's not good for Mexicans. It's only good for the oligarchy that controls the Mexican economy, this little tiny band at the very, very top. Talk about the one percenters. Boy, look at Mexico. And I almost get the feeling that the wealthy of America are looking at Mexico as a role model rather than the other way around. Because the goal here is how much more can I get my hands on? How much more money? How many more houses? Can I upgrade my Learjet to a Gulfstream, my Gulfstream to a 737, and so forth? There is a level of unbridled greed in America today that is driving corporations and those at the top of the food chain to push ever harder against America's working poor and middle class. That's what we're experiencing, folks. And along the way, we are undermining national security. Taiwan has now just joined the list of visa waiver countries. Visa waiver countries are those countries whose citizens do not need to apply for a visa before entering the United States. And you should know that the visa process, if properly conducted, offers a very serious layer of national security, a layer of protection. And anybody who knows anything about security knows that security is best done in layers. You know how it works. if you look at a fancy house, or if you want to look at the White House, you know, you have the big gates. Well, that's the outermost perimeter around the property. You don't put the gate next to the house. You put the gate at the edge of the property. And then you use floodlights. If someone jumps the fence, you can see them on the open land. You remove shrubs near the windows. If someone tries to break in, it's easy to spot them. Then you have a burglar alarm and so forth. It's done in layers. By requiring a visa, America, in effect, and I've said this at congressional hearings, the visa requirement pushes out America's borders beyond the physical United States of America. It pushes our borders out to embassies and consular offices where visas to the United States are issued. That becomes the first opportunity to screen those who would come here. And the 9/11 Commission found that the visa process that was so easily gamed by the terrorists who not only attacked us on 9/11, but who attacked us in 93 when we were attacked at the CIA and at the World Trade Center the first go-around. Six people killed at the first attack at the Trade Center. Three people, I believe it was two or three people killed at the CIA by a guy by the name of Cansey who got political asylum by committing fraud. These are the issues that left us vulnerable. In fact, I did my very first congressional hearing on the issue of visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud for Lamar Smith when he chaired the House Immigration Subcommittee back on May 20th, 1997. And the reason for that hearing were the terrorist attacks of 93. Remarkably, and I'm a registered Democrat. I don't know what to say about the Democratic Party, but they refused to hold the hearing, and Lamar Smith came in and held that hearing. So, you know, bottom line, that's when I did my very first hearing on immigration-related issues, with many more to follow, especially after the attacks of 9/11. So here's the point. If the 9/11 Commission says that issuing visas to people has to be done carefully so that we make certain to do all in our power that's reasonable to prevent terrorists from entering the United States, why in the world do we now allow citizens of 36 or 37 countries to enter the United States without needing a visa at all? By the way, an alien who lies on an application for that visa is committing a 10-year felony. If the lying is done so that the person can come here to commit a crime, let's say pull off a kidnapping or a bank robbery or some scam, now the penalty goes up to 15 years. If the crime involves drugs, visa fraud carries a 20-year maximum penalty. If the crime involves terrorism, it goes to 25 years. That's serious stuff. This is heavy duty. But if you come into the United States under the visa waiver program, there's no visa. There's no visa fraud. All of those measures that were enacted by Congress ostensibly to protect us go right out the window. There is no visa fraud if you don't need to apply for a visa. Absolutely astonishing. Our government will strip search 85-year-old women, will pat down 4-year-old little girls who are trying to get on board airplanes, but don't you dare mess with commerce. Don't you dare mess with the travel hospitality industries, because the Chamber of Commerce has partnered with all of those industries and the tourism industries and a manufacturing associations to create something known as the Discover America Partnership, believe it or not. And they want to eliminate visas altogether. And the Immigration or the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing on the visa waiver program not long ago. And incredibly, the focus of the hearing was whether or not a 3% visa refusal rate was the right number, if it should be higher or lower. But to my knowledge, looking at the prepared testimony, because I looked at it carefully, I was disappointed I wasn't invited to testify at that hearing. It's one that I've said that we've needed to hold for the longest time. But what was so remarkable was nobody talked about what do we lose when we allow aliens into the United States without requiring visas first. So we are irradiated by machines that, according to a government newspaper article, they will now finally, believe it or not, after all these years, and I hate to think about this, but I've been through those machines, they are now finally responding to complaints, and they're going to make sure that they don't give off too much radiation. Could you imagine a hospital using a CAT scan and not knowing whether or not it exceeded safety limits. Well, it's my understanding, unless that article is wrong, that they're now going to check into the radiation levels of the machines that they're using to scan passengers. We will do everything and anything in our power to create a theater of national security. But meanwhile, all we have is the illusion of national security. This is lunacy, and this is what passes for business as usual today in the United States of America, and it's very disturbing. It's disturbing because we should have learned the lessons. We were attacked at the CIA. We were attacked at the Trade Center in 93. The Clinton administration did absolutely nothing to address the ways that those terrorists entered, the way that they embedded themselves, managed to hide in plain sight. We have the attacks of 2001. Why? In my judgment, because no one looked at the way that those first attacks were carried out. And then, believe it or not, in March of 2002, 6 months to the day after 9/11, it was suddenly determined that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, they were dead. They were known throughout the world for being dead terrorists, were granted permission to attend flight school in the United States. Does it get any crazier? Unfortunately, it does. Unfortunately, it does because according to a recent report by the GAO, there are over 850,000 foreign students in the United States purportedly attending some 10,000 schools that are authorized to bring in foreign students, and our government doesn't even know if all those schools exist at all, if they aren't just exercises and paper so that people pay so-called registration and tuition fees rather than a smuggler. Absolutely astonishing. The same report found that 38% of the flight schools had not filed required paperwork with the FAA, with all this emphasis on airline safety. The same report found that at least one flight school was owned and operated, believe it or not, by illegal aliens and were instructing illegal aliens. But, you know, they got to look at those little bottles of aftershave. And if you're an 85-year-old woman with an adult diaper, God knows somebody may grope you. This is the kind of madness that passes for national security. And then you look at some of the news releases that are out there, and again, it leaves you absolutely shaking your head. Here is an amazing article. ICE deports leader of a multinational human smuggling network. And they talk about how they arrested this guy. He's one of 12 people who were involved with smuggling aliens into the United States. They believe that they had smuggled well over 100 illegal aliens, and not a word in that press release issued by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency as to what's being done to try to find the aliens they smuggled into the United States. This is astonishing. They went after the smuggler, and they didn't even talk about prosecuting this guy. They just said they were deporting him, and not a word about any efforts to locate any of the aliens who were smuggled into the United States. But here's the thing you should know about, and this is the stuff that keeps me awake at night. The aliens in this case that these smugglers were involved with, this is according to ICE. Let me read this to you. I'll read what I wrote about it. The aliens were smuggled in from East Africa and Bangladesh. They were smuggled in from Colombia into Central America and then on into the United States. Now, stop and think about it. A line in the sand is a report that was prepared by a subcommittee of the Homeland Security Committee at the behest of Congressman Mike McCall of Texas. He's a Republican from Texas. I cannot tell you how elated I am that Congressman McCall will be heading up. He will be the new chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, replacing Peter King from New York. But I am absolutely ecstatic that Mike McCall, the guy behind that incredible report, nothing new there, but I guess I could say there are some new things there, but this is a long-standing problem. The Pentagon, 2 years ago, reported on how Iran each week has direct airline flights from Tehran, Iran, into Caracas, Venezuela, and the passengers were Iranian shock troops landing in Venezuela. We know there were terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil. And in this report, that Mike McCall insisted on having done. They talked about increasing cooperation between terrorist organizations such as Hezbollah and Hamas, probably Al-Qaeda, and the drug trafficking organizations of Latin America. So here there's a press release talking about how we got the smuggler. They brought in over 100 people from East Africa and Bangladesh, and we know that Al-Qaeda does have a beachhead, a well-established one in Africa. They're active there, as they are in Bangladesh. But no one's looking for these people? Now, maybe they are, and they didn't want to write about it, but I just don't know. Because I will tell you that time and time and time again, when you read the ICE press releases, the emphasis is going after the smuggler. The emphasis is going after the guy that arranges a fraud marriage. But you will almost never see anything in these press releases about any action being taken against those aliens who avail themselves of the alleged services being offered by these criminals. And this is what leaves us vulnerable. Yes, we should go after the smugglers, and we don't have more than perhaps 2,000 immigration agents truly assigned to enforcing immigration laws. You know, there are 7,000 ICE agents for the whole country, and over half of them, I can tell you, are not doing immigration investigations but customs investigations for the entire United States of America. New York City, to put things in perspective, and Mayor Bloomberg was jumping up and down, and the police department should be commended, by the way. But we, you know, the murder rate in New York is at an all-time low. It's about manpower and resources. It's about human resources and other resources and political will to do a job. We have between 35 and 40,000 police officers protecting the citizens and residents of New York City. Almost 40,000. But where immigration enforcement is concerned, we have fewer than 3,500 if you divided the customs mission in half. Believe me, it's nowhere near that. Look, even if all 7,000 agents at ICE were 100% of the time dedicated to enforcing immigration laws, think of the gargantuan task that they have. We have 8 million residents in New York City, 40,000 police officers, 37,000, whatever the number is. It always fluctuates a bit depending on the economy and whether they replace officers who either resign or retire. So it always kind of fluctuates a bit. But we're in the upper 30,000 range, and you have about 10% that number enforcing immigration laws for the United States of America. How can you expect the system to function? And what do we keep hearing? Immigration is broken. The system is broken. You know, this is such an absurdity, and it is such a misleading statement. That's like saying that you have a Ferrari sitting in your driveway, but when you turn the key, nothing happens, and it turns out that there's no gas in the tank, and you say, well, we have a busted car. No, you don't have a busted car, dummy. Put gas in the tank, charge up the battery, and take it for a spin. We have no manpower, no resources, and immigration agents are continually being encumbered by the administration that puts them out there on the street, ever more restrictive criteria to determine whether or not an alien should be arrested for violating immigration laws. What are you expecting is going to come of that? You know, it's remarkable that we, again, I have to go full circle and talk about the politicians and the journalists who say, well, look, you know, these are only immigration laws. They just want to come here because they want to come to work. You don't know that. By the way, even if that was the case, it does undermine the American worker and it does undermine the American economy. Because what you will not hear from the people that keep thumping away on those TV shows, oh, you know, we have to stimulate the economy. We're going to bring in all these foreign workers. Foreign workers do what common sense tells them to do, and you or I would do the same things, folks. When they get a paycheck, they send as much of it as possible home. This flies in the face of that very costly economic stimulus package or packages that have, you know, jacked up America's national debt to the highest level in history. We're going to pump money into the economy to stimulate growth. Meanwhile, We've never brought in more foreign workers than today, and the goal of foreign workers is to pump money out of the economy. You know, imagine you had a swimming pool in your backyard, and imagine it's a beautiful summer day, and you fill the pool, there's a drought, so the water is very costly, you know, they jack up the rates because we don't have enough water, and you fill the pool, and the next morning you get all up excited, I'm going to go in the pool and take a dip, and you put on your bathing suit and you run outside, and then you realize that being a dummy, you left the drain open and now you've got a dry pool. That's the equivalent of what is happening to American dollars. Every single year, Mexico gets well over 20 billion, with a B, 20 billion American dollars sent home by foreign workers from Mexico working illegally in the United States. And that's the visible money. That's the visible money, folks. And if you go into the neighborhoods of New York, like Roosevelt Avenue, and some folks from North Carolina who were filming a documentary, Mark Hager and company, if you're listening, I hope you're having a great evening, guys. They came to New York, and I drove them down Roosevelt Avenue and Jackson Heights, where the drug central exists for New York, if you will. That's one of the areas where we know there's lots of drug trafficking activity and movement of money. 1 o'clock in the morning, folks, places that cash checks and wire money are wide open with people waiting online to conduct business. 1 o'clock in the morning, you could have thought it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. This is where the drain is. This is where the money leaves our economy. And of all of the remittances being wired from first world countries to third world countries, at least as of about a year ago, the World Bank said that roughly 50% of the money being siphoned off of first world economies was coming from the United States of America. This is what we're dealing with. Please understand the magnitude of the problem. Please also understand that the unemployment rate is hammering most heavily at America's minorities, the American black community, the American Latino community. These folks are really taking it in the neck. They're the ones who are being made to suffer the worst, bad as it is for everybody. And then we hear this nonsense about this mythical Latino vote. I have to make the point because it drives me nuts. There are so many journalists who, if there is even the faintest aroma of law enforcement engaging in profiling, they are in front of those microphones and in front of those cameras screaming bloody murder and righteous indignation. Oh my God, they profiled. Is it not profiling to talk about the Latino vote or the black vote or the Jewish vote? And they do it with regularity. Well, if the politicians want to win the vote of the Latinos of America, they have to come up with comprehensive reform or the Dream Act. Really? You know, I find that astonishing. And there are some conservatives who are starting to drink the Kool-Aid. I want everybody to stop and give this a bit of thought. Why in the world would any American who is struggling to find meaningful employment be happy to find out that if legislation such as these amnesty bills or the Dream Act passes, this would mean that millions of authorized workers will be dumped into a labor pool that doesn't have enough work for the people already in the pool? This makes no sense. And we know historically that the way they process these applications, that's just a perfunctory once-over. They call it a security check. A security check, folks, is almost worthless. And I'll tell you why it's almost worthless. All it means is you run fingerprints and the name the person gives you through a database. So if you're dealing with a fugitive from another country and we don't have the fingerprints on file, or if we're dealing with a terrorist from someplace else in the world and we don't have the fingerprints on file, and they use a fake name, which is why fingerprinting is always done of people that get arrested, because police know they caught a fish. The problem is they don't know what fish they caught. So if the prints aren't in our files, and if the name is a pretend name, you know, guess what's going to happen? These folks will get a clean bill of health. A background check takes seconds. A background investigation can take weeks, at least days, but certainly weeks. When I held a top secret clearance, that clearance took quite some time to process. obvious. They would go out and interview people and show photographs and check bank records and so forth. But a background check, you know, it's kind of like the difference between going to the hospital and have a full physical done where they check you out stem to stern and x-ray and prod and poke every organ of your body, or you have your blood pressure checked at the mall. They are not the same. And they're trying to convince, the government, is trying to convince the average American that the background check is as effective as that exam at the hospital, but in reality, all they're doing is checking temperature and blood pressure. It doesn't work. It doesn't work, and we know that's how the terrorists attacked our country. That's how they embedded themselves in the United States. But we're continuing to use this idiotic concept. For what purpose? Because the pressure is on by people that stand to make a ton of money, whether it's the immigration lawyers, who in that flood of humanity would see an unlimited number of new clients, the banks that love the fact that money is being wired because they charge fees for opening the bank accounts, opening the cards, and wiring the money. Not all the money goes by remittances, by the way. Some of them go because the guy has a bank account, and if you have a bank account, you know you have an ATM card. So you take the ATM card and you send one overseas or wherever it is the money is supposed to go, and people can then get the money out of the bank account that way. There's a million ways to move money, and almost every one of them, almost, there's a couple that don't, but almost every one of them result in significant fees being paid to banks and other such institutions. So they are ecstatic. The more this happens, the wealthier they get, the poorer we get. And then let's look at another article in the news, as I promised in my notice that I was going to be on the air today. You know, it's just amazing to me. But here is a headline, and this just blew me away when I saw it. This was in the Boston Globe. They've been doing a series of articles on immigration. And when you see this one, it just blows you away. Many freed criminals avoid deportation and strike again. And then the subtitle, the vast and secretive U.S. prison system for immigrants stymied when it tries to deport some criminals has quietly released thousands, including killers, a Globe investigation shows. Amazing news report. Let me tell you how it starts out. Let me tell you how it's, so you will understand that this is not about saying I dislike Mexicans. That's not at all the case. And I get so furious every time I hear this garbage. Let me start this out, and this is directly quoting from the Boston Globe's article that was published on December the 12th. Flushing, New York, Qian Wu thought the man who brutally attacked her was gone forever. She was sure that Wang Chen, a Chinese citizen who slipped into America on a ship and stayed in the country illegally, would be deported as soon as he got out of jail for choking, punching, and pointing a knife at her in 2006. Let me read that again. Quan Wu thought the man who brutally attacked her was gone forever. She was sure that Wang Chen, a Chinese citizen who had slipped into America on a ship and stayed in the country illegally, would be deported as soon as he got out of jail for choking, punching, and pointing a knife at her in 2006. He was neither a Mexican, nor did he run the Mexican border. This guy was a ship jumper. And you should know that in the early 80s, I was the Marine Intelligence Officer for Immigration in New York, and that was what I went after, ship jumpers. And they were from China, they were from Greece, they were from Italy, they were from Australia, they were from the four corners of the planet, and this had very little to do, mostly, with anyone from Latin America. This is not about Latin America or the southern border. It's about an immigration system that has more holes in it than the average Swiss cheese you buy at the corner deli. But the story goes on, and this is where it really gets disgusting and horrific, and this is the stuff of my nightmares, ladies and gentlemen. But China refused to take Chen back, so after jailing Chen on and off for 3 years in Texas, immigration officials believed that they were out of options and did what they have done with thousands of criminals like him. They quietly let him go. Nobody warned Wu or prosecutors or the public. I mean, this is, after all, how the federal government works these days, right? Government by the people, of the people, for the people. Nobody warned Wu or prosecutors or the public that they let this thug go. The petite 46-year-old woman learned Chen was still here when he stormed into her unlocked apartment one day in January 2010 and announced, this is a quote, "I bet you didn't expect to see me." Terrified, she called the police, and he fled. But for 2 weeks, Chen was free to stalk her and finally to catch her as she hurried home with milk and bread one afternoon. Chen then finished what he had started earlier, bashing Wu on the head with a hammer, slashing her with a knife, and as she lay crumpled in a grimy stairwell, he ripped out her heart and lung and fled with his macabre trophies. She lived in horror in the last 2 weeks of her life, said Yung Wei Guo, Wu's widower, through an interpreter in New York. She knew there was somebody coming to kill her, and we asked the police for protection and also the government, but they did nothing. This is her husband talking about this. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? But if you ask the ACLU, or if you ask La Raza, or if you ask the American Immigration Lawyers Association, they would be appalled if you called this guy an illegal alien, because after all, he's just undocumented. He didn't have his papers, but he did have his knife, didn't he? The primary mission of any government is to look out for the well-being of its citizens and the people who reside within that country. Now, they don't talk about the nationality of his victim, but judging by that name, I'm going to take a wild guess and tell you that she was certainly a member of the Chinese community in the United States. I don't care what her immigration status was. I don't care if she was a citizen or an illegal alien. She was a victim of our government's refusal to secure the borders and enforce the laws after the fact. If you can get past the border patrol, if you can jump a ship, if you can be admitted through the inspections program, it doesn't really matter much what you do. You're home free. This is like playing baseball and telling the outfielders to sit out the game. And I will tell you that that news report goes on at length talking about all the other victims from all over the place that are being killed just the way that she was by people who are here in violation of law. Absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. I was on Fox and Friends, and I debated an immigration lawyer a couple of years ago. And it was about how San Francisco had created a sanctuary city where they are taking people who were convicted of drug trafficking crimes, teaching them English, and expunging their records so they could find work in the United States. Well, who in the world needs to be taught English? Most likely an illegal alien. Most likely. And here was this immigration lawyer saying, I don't understand the problem. You know, they're going to come back anyway, so why not help them out? What do you mean they're going to come back anyway? They're coming back anyway because there's no consequence to their coming back anyway. This woman died because immigration failed. And if this guy had to be released because China refused to take him back, which is a problem for many countries, by the way, you should know, this is not as rare as you would hope it is, there have been members of Congress who've said, listen, we should not be issuing visas to those citizens of those countries that won't take their criminals back. Then it got watered down to, well, maybe what we'll do is not give diplomatic visas to their diplomats, and even that is controversial. Goodness gracious, America is supposed to protect its citizens. That's why we spend all that money, and more important than money, the young lives of our soldiers and the five military branches are out there supposedly protecting our lives. Well, guess what? Our failures at immigration enforcement and to effectively administer the laws undermine the military of the United States and America. It's an exercise in futility when we allow murderers to come into the United States. Congressman Steve King, another one of my heroes, co-chairman, or I believe that's his title at this point, at the Immigration Subcommittee over in the House, did a news conference on the steps of the Capitol not long ago. I was surprised that he had quoted me, because at a congressional hearing he asked me if I knew how many people died every year because of criminal aliens, and I said I didn't know, but that I would be willing to bet that it was more than the people that we lost on 9/11, that it was a multiple, in fact. And that got him so fired up and made him think about it that he commissioned a study by the GAO, and they found out that 7,000 people are killed in the United States in an average year by aliens who are here illegally, by criminal aliens, by aliens who go out, drink, and drive and kill people, aliens who should not be on our streets. You know, I started the program talking a bit about what happened in Connecticut and how horrific it was that those children were killed. It sickens me. I happen to be a parent of four children. They're older than that now, but they certainly were once that age, as we all start out young. And it's horrible. I can't even imagine contemplating it. I know that the police officers who responded will never be the same. They are, I assure you, suffering post-traumatic stress, and they probably will for the rest of their lives. And there were 40 people killed, many of them children. Here we're talking about a population of 7,000 innocent victims being killed in the United States, and we still have to have a debate about whether or not we should be enforcing immigration laws. This country is so screwed up, I don't even know where to begin to start with this business. This is crazy stuff. I love to see people come here from the four corners of the world. I am a New Yorker. I live in what is arguably the most diverse city in the world, certainly the most diverse city in the United States. I think it's wonderful that we have such a diversity of culture in New York. I am retired. I could move anywhere, and I couldn't imagine leaving New York City, even with Bloomberg for mayor, you know. But the point of the matter is, all joking aside, we have got to understand that this is not about xenophobia. This is about common sense. There's another story. This is a news release from Immigration, December 21st this year. ICE Dallas office deports man wanted for homicide in Mexico. And it starts out saying a man from Mexico with a U.S. manslaughter conviction, who's also wanted in his home country for homicide, was deported and returned and turned over to Mexican law enforcement authorities Wednesday by officers with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the Division of Enforcement and Removal Operations, ERO. Jorge Gonzalez Acosta, 46, first illegally entered the United States in August 1982. He pleaded guilty in 1987 to voluntary manslaughter in the Southern District of Texas and was sentenced to 30 years in prison. While serving the sentence, a federal immigration judge ordered his deportation. So he was released from prison and removed to Mexico in June of 96. Afterwards, on various occasions, Gonzalez Acosta illegally reentered the United States, which is a felony. He was twice prosecuted for this crime and was sentenced to 37 months in prison and then again 57 months in prison in December 2004 and 2009, respectively. Gonzalez Acosta was released from his latest sentence into ICE custody December 11, 2012. Where ICE officials worked with the Mexicans and sent him back because he's wanted for murder there. Folks, this is not victimless crimes, not in the least. And we've got to start to use language and demand that the language that we use be factually grounded and accurate. Undocumented does not fly, except to remind everyone that these people are unable or more likely unwilling, because it's to their advantage to conceal their true identities, they are unable or unwilling to provide official, reliable documentation as to their true identities. But the biggest thing to keep your eye on, just like you're watching that magician, ignore that pretty girl in the little bathing suit that's on stage with him, hard as it might be. Pay attention to his left hand, because that's where the action is. And here, where the action is, these are aliens who evaded an inspections process that is supposed to keep bad guys out of the United States. And in fact, if you look at the law, and I've written about it frequently for CAPS at capsweb.org, and it's on my website, michaelcutler.net, and I've talked about it in my interviews and talkborder.com, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. Go look it up, 1182, Title 8. And it talks about who's supposed to be kept out of the country. It starts off with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are violent or sex offenders, convicted felons, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, terrorists, gang members, gun runners, This is who we're trying to keep out. So when someone runs the border, the presumption has to be that they know that if their true backgrounds were known to ICE or known to CBP, Customs and Border Protection, that they would not be admitted into the United States. Final point to be made about any amnesty program. Anybody who is a convicted felon in the United States, and we're being told, oh, we'll get track of these people and so forth, they're not going to come forward if they know that their fingerprints are probably in the system. They're still going to be out there using fake names. I worry about the fugitives from justice who have committed heinous crimes in their home countries, who will lie about their nationalities and lie about their identities and lie about their backgrounds and be rewarded with a green card, be rewarded with U.S. citizenship under an assumed identity so that they can travel freely around the world under a fake identity that we will have provided for them. Think back, and I know a lot of people maybe don't remember this, but after the Second World War, how difficult it was for the United States to find and deport the Nazi war criminals who ran the concentration camps, who killed so many thousands and thousands of innocent victims, and not just Jews, but all people. The Holocaust claimed the lives of 6 million Jews. Altogether, it claimed the lives of over 13 million human beings. And think of how difficult it was digging these bums out of the woodwork, digging them out. And today we have to worry about terrorists, we have to worry about transnational gangsters. There is a lawful system through which aliens are admitted into the United States every day of the week. We need to beef that legal system up and do more to make certain that it becomes increasingly difficult for anyone to violate that system. That's what is necessary. The idea that we would provide lawful status to millions, and I would argue it's likely tens of millions of illegal aliens, with official identity documents and lawful status, even though our government would be utterly unable to confirm their true identities, would create a national security nightmare for the United States in a particularly perilous era. It would undermine national security for decades to come. That is not what this government should be doing. This is not what any politician should be doing, thinking that this is the way to get votes. Final point about that. For anybody out there who thinks that the way that Republicans or conservatives can win this mythical vote of Latino voters, think again. See, I have a belief, and it's based on what I've heard from folks I meet and speak to when I do speaking engagements around the United States. And by the way, if you're interested in having me come to your neck of the woods, you can reach me through capsweb.org, you can reach me through michaelcutler.net, or you can reach me through talkborder.com. But wherever I go, there's almost always folks in the audience who happen to be Latino, and they come up to me and agree with me. And they say to me, Mr. Cutler, I resent people who are going to jump the line after my family and I waited so long on that line to come here legally. I don't want to have to compete with people for a job when the way they got here was to violate the law. They're angrier than anybody you're ever going to meet, and rightfully so. They waited on that line. They did what the law and what decency required them to do. Think how angry we all get if someone jumps ahead of us when there's a road construction or an accident ahead and you have to do a one-for-one merge and there's always some wackaloon who, no matter what, will not let you get in front of him, or he won't let someone, or he'll try to cut into the line where he shouldn't, and people get furious. Well, there you're talking about wasting a couple of seconds. Imagine when it's years. See, I really believe that the people who vote for the Democrat ticket are people who want big government. Now, we could have that debate. I'm a Democrat. I don't want huge government, but I have my points of disagreement with some conservatives, and that's fine. We're Americans. We're supposed to disagree. We are. That's our obligation. That's why the First Amendment talks about the right to peaceably assemble, so we can have the debates. But I absolutely wind up scratching my head at people who think that the way that you're going to grow the voter base for a conservative movement is to bring in more people who most likely want bigger government, who are liberal, not conservative. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. It's amazing what people will do when they operate out of fear and not out of common sense. The time has long since come, ladies and gentlemen, that people in positions of leadership, for once and for all, demonstrate true leadership. Congressman Lou Barletta is one of those individuals who I absolutely am in awe of. He is a guy who stands up for what he believes is right. We've had many conversations off the record, and I won't get into those conversations. Lou, if you're listening, calm down. I'm not going to say anything, but I will tell you that he's made it clear to me in our conversations that he will not compromise on what he thinks are key issues, because then it would be pointless to be in Washington. And boy, oh boy, wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody who held an elected position felt the same way about his obligation to his core principles. That, folks, is what I call true leadership. That's what's missing in America today. You know, it's always wonderful joining you at the end of a week to sit down and have a conversation with all of you. I certainly appreciate your listening to my show. If you like it, please tell your friends and neighbors about it. I'm trying to get as many people as possible to find out what the world looks like to me after my having been involved, incredible as it sounds to even my own ears, for 41 years with the immigration issue, which after all is a major factor in all of the challenges and threats that America faces. And if in listening to my program, and I usually have guests on, but sometimes I just like to have a conversation with you by myself, as I did this evening, but if after listening to my program and going to my websites of capsweb.org or talkborder.com or michaelcutler.net, just to plug them one more time, if you find that that information fires you up, please do something about it that's constructive besides getting aggravated. You know, when we go to restaurants, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat and the way that we want it prepared. And if that waiter or waitress doesn't do as we ask, we will generally send the food back to the kitchen. And if that doesn't work, most people leave. We've got to be no less specific with our elected representatives. You know, I always like to write in my commentaries, and I always like to end my programs by reminding people that democracy is not a spectator sport. It is so important that we all get involved with our own government. New Year's is coming, folks. Please make that your New Year's resolution, to become as educated as you can about as many issues as you can, to spend as much time on this educational process and in engaging with your elected representatives as you do with whatever your favorite athletic event or other diversion might be. Certainly, it's good to have an interest in sports and various hobbies, and I'd be the last guy to tell you don't do it. I've been a passionate astronomy advocate for I don't know how many years, and certainly I have other interests as well. But job one right now is to be the best citizens that we can be, and that's the way to do it. So please, folks, make that your New Year's resolution coming up next week. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. You got to be in it to win it. I ask you to do your fair share. Have a great evening, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend coming up, and I wish all of you a happy, healthy, safe, and successful new year. Good night, everybody.